You're listening to New Retirement Radio, brought to you by the team at Prout Financial Design.
Hello, I'm your host, Certified Financial Planner Dennis Prout.
I'm Heidi Cartwright, Financial Advisor and RICP.
I'm Deanne Jennings, and I'm here to share data and dive into the world of finance with you.
Advisors associated with Prout Financial Design may be either 1, registered representatives with and securities offered through LPL Financial, member FINRA SIPC, and investment advisor representatives of CG Advisory Services, a registered investment advisor, or 2, solely investment advisor representatives of CG Advisory Services, a registered investment advisor, and not affiliated with LPL Financial. Investment advice offered through CG Advisory Services, a registered investment advisor, CG Advisory Services, and Prout Financial Design are separate entities from LPL Financial. Dennis Prout and Nathan Prout are solely investment advisor representatives of CG Advisory Services and are not affiliated with LPL Financial. The opinions voiced in this show program are for general information only and are not intended to provide specific advice or recommendations for any individual. To determine which strategies or investments may be suitable for you, consult the appropriately qualified professional before making a decision.
WTCM News Talk 580 on a Thursday. Welcome aboard. It's 8 minutes after 10. Time for New Retirement Radio from Prout Financial Design in Traverse City, starring Mr. Dennis Prout. Good morning, sir.
It is so good to be here on January 23rd. We're cutting a new show today. Who would have thought?
We're cutting a new show.
We're cutting a new show. Cutting a rug. Well, it's great to be here at WTCM in Traverse City on this very snowy, not so cold morning.
I've not been outside, so how are the roads and the weather out
there? The roads a little bit greasy, surprisingly so, even along the main drag there on Munson Avenue and or front, whichever you like to call it. And then, let's see, what else? The amount of snow. Mm-hmm. Now, Heidi, good morning, Heidi Cartwright.
Good morning.
Heidi Cartwright, our own managing director. You said you have 8 to 10 overnight or so?
Oh, yeah. It's the light, fluffy stuff, the big flakes. Mm-hmm. So it's
like
not
feathers.
Too hard to shovel, but, you know, you throw it up and it just blows right back.
Yeah.
So it's a never-ending battle.
Right. Yeah, it was rock and roll with a shovel this morning out there in the driveway, Ron. It's just like, froom, and it blows away. Kind of just almost
fluffy.
Fun. Almost
that stuff, if you crunch it down 10 inches, winds up like 1 inch.
Yeah, something like that. At least it's not zero out there.
Yeah, right.
That was cold yesterday.
We've got that.
Feels like
right.
A heat wave today. Mm-hmm. It's like, oh, wow.
It does.
This is nice.
Relatively. And then Deanne Jennings.
Good morning, Dennis. It's a pleasure to be here, and happy winter to everyone. That snow is beautiful, though.
It is.
Big flakes. It's gorgeous.
It's just sticking to all the branches. It makes it look like a fairyland.
Yeah.
So,
it does.
Yeah.
Ron.
Yes.
So what would you guess the percentage, according to NOAA, that the Great Lakes are frozen right now, this morning, percentage,
National
overall.
Oceanic Administration.
Whatever, Atmospheric Administration, yeah.
What percentage of all 5 Great Lakes are frozen?
Correct.
I'm going to say 20% maybe.
Ooh, what a great guess. 23.
Ooh, nice. Ooh, you should win for that.
It's
job.
Moving up. That's it's moving awesome. Up, baby. It's cool to see. No pun intended.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. By the way, this week is Deanne Jennings' last. She is going on to a new endeavor, and Deanne, we will miss you.
Oh, thank you
very
Dennis.
Much.
It's been a great pleasure to be a part. Oh, thank you, Ron. It's been such a pleasure to be a part of the radio show. I can honestly say this was my favorite responsibility in my job description is preparing for the radio show. I absolutely love it, and Ron and Colleen are amazing, and Dennis and Heidi are amazing as well. So this is bittersweet, but it's been an honor to be a part of this radio show legacy. Thank you, Dennis.
We'll miss not seeing you as you're behind my computer.
I know, exactly.
You certainly will miss, Ian.
Yes, agreed. Yeah. Well, so if you have a question of a financial nature and you would like to pose it, perhaps we could answer it But our number, if you would, Ron, is?
You can call us or you can send us a text message at the same number, 231-947-0023, 947-0023.
Great. We're looking at an article this morning, a framework to address retirees' biggest fear. The biggest fear in general of retirees, according to LIMRA, the life insurance organization, Life Insurance Marketing and Research Association, showing that hundreds of retirees and pre-retirees across multiple income segments continue to identify these categories as important to their retirement. But their biggest fear, what would you say, Ron? Their biggest fear?
Running out of money.
You got it. Yes. A framework to address retirees' biggest fear. Of all the concerns that keep retirees up at night, one of the biggest might be the fear of running out of money. Questions like, how long will I live? Yes?
Well, most people don't know that answer.
Nobody knows that.
I was actually picturing asking the wife, you know, how long do you think I'll live? Well, how long will I let you live, as it were? And will unexpected cost or events erode my savings? You know what? Who said this? Ruth, his wife, Ruth
Graham.
Said about being married to Billy Graham, divorce, no, murder, yes. So, you know, perspective.
Radical.
I always thought that was funny. Coming from the, you know, wife.
Of the pastor.
Yes. Yeah. So, number one, living. Are the essentials covered? Living expenses typically include day-to-day necessities such as food, housing, transportation, and health care. Reflective yawn, maybe. Oh, that's so boring. Well, is it covered? And how much is it? What does it take to live? Well, do we really have to start at the elementary basics? Yes, we do. But if you know that, it is amazing. It helps reduce the stress. He's such a philosopher. How did he get into the money business, being such a philosophy prof, you know? He can't stand it.
Food, housing, health care, and wasn't there a fourth one?
Yes, food, I'm sure there were.
Food,
housing, transportation, and health care. Health care is the biggie. That goes up, historically, about 6% or so per year. Investors might prefer to have full confidence in covering these types of expenses from the beginning, even though they may have some flexibility in addressing them over time. Obviously, it's amazing how much flexibility we can cause over our own financial situation. I've seen it in retirees again and again. So keep in mind, you can be flexible after you're 70. It's just up to you. If it's going to be, it's up to you, if you will. To lifestyle, what are your optional expenses? The lifestyle block includes discretionary spending, such as travel, spending on grandkids, dining out, and entertainment. Are grandchildren an optional expense? I don't understand that.
I'd say with a lot of people, it's one of your daily basic living expenses.
I agree entirely. What constitutes a lifestyle expense will vary from retiree to retiree, obviously. And then three, emergencies. Do you have a cash cushion? And please do not use an 8% withdrawal rate as a viable withdrawal rate for you. As I heard a very well-known financial person refer to a viable spending rate as being 8%, that is not viable, okay?
What is 8% of what?
Of what's there.
You mean taking out 8%?
Being able to draw 8% per year. Well, you know, that's what the market's returns have been, 8, 10% per year. Well, not including 2022. Obviously, the markets can go against that. And not everybody is the same. Now, some folks are not even going to come close to that. So that 8% is almost like, you know, it's a non-issue or a non-event, if you will. But for some who are counting on that year after year after year, that's not a good percentage.
So if you have your retirement nest egg and you're taking, let's say, 4% every year, and it's earning every year more than that, does it ever go down? It doesn't go down, does it?
No, you would, in essence, be able to adjust it on upward. Yeah. But you'd be relatively safe, relatively, given compliance, relatively safe if you adjusted it each year to meet that change in value, which you could do.
Adjust it, yeah.
It depends on how much also you want to leave for those that follow. How important it is it rather, for you to leave it to grandkids and or to your favorite dog shelter, whatever that might be. Think long term.
Yeah.
Big picture. That's where you're really going to benefit. As scary as this might be, that's why we run for every new potential, we'll just say that, client that comes in. We run a financial plan for them. We run all of these numbers so that you can know with relative certainty that, yes, I can do this, or we've saved too much. Here's where we suggest perhaps you might want to spend more. We had that conversation 2 days ago. Is that ever energizing?
Mm.
Not everybody wants to do that. We get that. But at least it lets you know that you've achieved your goal, or that you can do this at age 62, 65, 67, 75, you know, whatever it is.
Lets you know how much space you have in that budget.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when people come in and they give us estimates of what they think they're going to spend on those daily living expenses, or maybe the grandchildren or something like that. And that can go in. And once you have that financial plan, you can see, yes, I have space, or no, I don't. Maybe I need to do some additional savings before I actually retire. So it just gives you some guidelines. It's not going to predict exactly, because everything's always changing all the time. But at least it gives you a ballpark where you can say, yeah, I think we are going to be able to travel each year. Or, oh, maybe we can only travel every third year or something like that.
You can adjust as you go.
We'll go through a few text messages before you get to the next one.
Let's do that.
Somebody wants to know if Deanne is also going to the Bears. like the Lions offensive coordinator.
Shot across the bow. That is such... It's like they get all of these good people and train them up and find them. And, you know, they get shuttled off to Buffalo, if you will.
Also, someone says regarding that lightweight snow, it's the perfect consistency for your backpack blower or battery-operated leaf blower.
Yes.
Oh.
Fire it up.
There makes me feel like a man.
Now, here's a serious question.
Yes.
I turned 62 on February 3rd. I have two questions. Should I take Social Security now? Should I wait to see if Trump is going to come through with the no tax on Social Security benefits?
Well, given that was one of his promises, I'll start with the last question first. I would say your chances are pretty good. Now, We'll just give you some generals. I cannot say on the radio, you know, whether you should collect at 62, and I will not, but I can give you some general provisos, if you will. Why did I say it that way? I don't know. So at age 62, it's going to depend on how long you intend to live. If your spouse is going to collect on your benefits, you may want to wait. So if you're going to live longer, you have longevity within your family.
Mm-hmm.
That's expected. You're in good health now. You may decide you want to wait. 3, do you need the income now? If you need it now, then collect it now in general. Well, what if I don't need it, or I have other income sources, or I have a portfolio? See, those are the questions we would ask.
It depends,
but there are some key components where you'd want to say, yes, it makes sense to draw. Or no. Wait.
Okay. Have you said on average or every year you wait starting at 62, your benefit will go up 8% a year?
That's correct, sir.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Break-even point, if you were to wait until 70, the latest you can wait. Well, you can wait as long as you like, but 70, at age 70 is your maximum benefit. There's no way you should wait beyond 70. We've had a few folks do that. That you're hurting yourself. So, that shows the spirit of independence in this country.
Mm-hmm.
People really don't like to collect from what they think, you know, it's the federal government. They don't want to do that. It's admirable,
yep.
But you're hurting yourself. Now, Break-even point is about 8 years, 8 to 9 years, if you wait until age 70, okay? All right. Another part of that is, again, will your spouse get your benefit or his or her own if you die? Because there's a death benefit component of Social Security that many don't discuss. So if your spouse is going to collect on yours, that would be one other reason you may decide to wait, okay?
General proviso.
You betcha.
There's so many layers to that, Dennis, when you're talking about Social Security. And that's why we have these, we do that financial plan, because a piece of the financial plan talks about, like, what is the best age for you to take? What's your best chance of success? What age is that you should claim? And, I mean, a lot of other things, like, maybe you have a pension. If you have a very large pension, you may not need as much guaranteed income systematic income from Social Security to be able to meet your expenses. But maybe you don't have a pension, and Social Security will be your primary guaranteed income source.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
So all those discussions come into play. So an easy question to ask, there's a lot that goes into the answer.
It so reminds me of the attorney I talked to years ago, who a well-known business founder in this city referred to his attorney as counselor. I'm not going to name him. And he would just call him counselor. So getting wise counsel in these situations, some of it is elementary. Some of it is not. You might be surprised, but just being able to bounce that off and have those conversations, I consider to be invaluable. They really are. That's where we can come in. Okay.
And one other comment regarding the basics. When you look at, you don't want to run out of money in retirement, look at your basics. Someone said, my spouse says two vehicles and dark chocolate are essentials. What's the opinion of the financial advisors?
My opinion is 100% in your camp. I couldn't agree more. It makes my heart glad. And then, so three, emergency. Do you have a cash cushion? Number four, legacy. Do you plan to pass on your wealth, including the chocolate? Okay. Mm-hmm. How important are those to you? What amount would you like to leave? All those are questions that can be answered with a great financial plan.
One more. Can my wife start drawing on her Social Security while mine continues to grow? Then when mine maxes out, or when I start to collect, she changes to mine because she would receive more having half of mine.
Heidi wants to answer that one.
Okay. I do. That was a question. Yes, there are several issues there. There are two benefits that come into play when you're married. There is your own working benefit that you can draw on starting at 62. And there is a spousal benefit, which is half of what your spouse's benefit would be. So, you want to take whichever one is higher. And in this case, this example that we're having, yes, they could switch over to that. But by taking Social Security early, you're locking in a reduction from the full benefit. Because anytime that you claim before your full retirement age, you will incur a reduced benefit depending on how many years have gone by from 62 to your full retirement benefit. So
even if you collect on your benefit of your spouse later.
Correct. That will even impact switching later. You're still going to have a reduced benefit because you started before your full retirement benefit.
See, I was going to say that, but I just decided to let Heidi say it for me.
It can get pretty tricky.
It can. So we want to discuss Heidi's article, one Roth IRA rule that should be dispensed with, according to Sarah there at Ed Slott.
Yeah, so as we all maybe have heard, we have a new administration in power. People might have heard about it. It's been a couple of days. And so there's a lot of talk out there about, you know, what's going to happen? What's going to happen to regulations? What's going to happen to taxes? And there's a lot of people out there with, like, some ideas, things they'd like to see get done. And Ed Slott is no exception. They have something they'd really like to see Congress address in the coming years with regard to Roth IRAs. And that item is the income limit rule that applies to Roth IRA contributions. They say this is a pointless rule and they want it eliminated. Whether that will happen, we don't know. But what is this rule that they're talking about? Well, the Roth IRA tax year contribution limit for 2024 and 2025 is $7,000 a year. Those who are 50 or older by the end of the year can contribute up to $8,000. So you get a $1,000 what we call catch up.
Now that's it for 2025.
2024 and 2025 was the same.
They're the same.
Yes.
Okay, good to know.
Okay.
Thank you.
So, but not everyone is eligible to make that Roth IRA contribution because Congress has placed income restrictions on Roth contributions. So there are limits. If your reportable income is over a certain amount, you cannot make a Roth contribution. So in 2025, the lower end of the phase-out range for married is $236,000, and for singles, it's $150,000. So some people out there may have paychecks that exceed that amount, and then they can't make these Roth contributions.
So in essence, a discrimination against those who are higher earners and their ability to make a Roth contribution.
Right. So there are several reasons why the new Congress should make the Roth IRA contribution income limits, stop that limit and get rid of it. One is there is a way for people who make excess of those limits that we talked about to be able to contribute to a Roth IRA, and that's called the backdoor Roth IRA contribution. This is an easy workaround. You simply make a non-deductible traditional IRA contribution, and there's no income limits on that, and then you immediately convert that to a Roth IRA. Now, there are a lot of rules that go along with doing this, and it's tricky, and it's a lot of paperwork because you have to open the IRA, you have to open a Roth. So there's a lot of tricky things you have to do to get that to work. It's also complicated by some pro rata rules where if you have a simple or a SEP, you can get into some mathematical computations that may reduce the amount that you can put in. So they're saying this, you can still do it. It's just really complicated to do that. So it's unnecessary. And so why have that rule that causes this confusion?
Now, please keep in mind, this does not apply to Roth 401k contributions or Roth 403b contributions. There are no income limits on making contributions to your Roth accounts within a qualified retirement account at work, if you will, okay?
And it's almost like you've read this article, Dennis, because that's their next argument. They're like, why are we limiting people who aren't in a plan?
Mm-hmm.
When you're in an employer plan, there are no limits, income limits. You can go right up to the limit for the plan, whatever type of plan you have. But it's no way related to how much you make. So exactly, you make their argument for them. So they're like, why do we have this rule? It just seems to be unnecessary, and it could be easier for all and maybe encourage more people to invest in Roth IRAs for their future.
It's interesting to note that those that pay the highest amount of tax as a percentage of income are those in those higher brackets. The government would collect, it would not harm their collection from the higher income individuals at all if they made a Roth contribution, because they still have to declare income on that amount, even though it's contributed to a Roth. So I just don't understand it. In essence, to me, it's simply a way for a politically correct tax policy is what that is.
Well, it is the government. So usually when people say, I don't understand why that rule exists, I'm always like, well, there you have it.
Understand the politics behind it.
So they say if you have money and you make too much money, you can't put it in that envelope. You're disqualified. But if you give it to that guy and he walks around the block and hands it off to somebody else and he comes down through the chimney and walks down the hallway and turns it upside down and he sticks it in the envelope, that's okay.
Well, I think as long as he comes through the chimney,
but that's the secret. The secret passage.
It's like people have a loophole.
Yes, there is that loophole. So they've created a loophole. Why don't they just get rid of the rule? Because it would just make it easier. And that's their argument. And so we will definitely let our listeners know if we see any change in this area. But that is on the wish list for Ed Slott.
Is Chuck Schumer's middle initial actually...
No,
it's not it. Okay. That's from one of the breaks that we had. I was just curious. All right. Let's do stats next. Let's hit those, and then we're going to go to the 24 biggest tax rules regarding IRAs. Yes. Deanne, please.
All right. The stats for this week. Chinese investment is slowing down. Chinese companies invested $960 million in U.S. companies in 2024. Is that a lot? Not really. That number was $46 billion in 2016. But two things have happened since then. The Chinese government has restricted how much money as companies can invest in foreign countries, and the U.S. regulations barred many Chinese companies from investing in American ones.
Wow.
And according to analysts, investments might shrink even more with potential trade war. And that source is Market Brief.
People might also say that they need the money within their own economy. Mm-hmm. They're struggling that much.
Yes. That's a good point. Renters rejoice. Median rent fell by 1.1% across the U.S. in 2024, lowering housing costs for renters across the nation. One exception, the Midwest.
Oh.
Isn't that interesting? Where big cities like Cincinnati, Kansas City, Minneapolis all saw their rents go up. And that source is Market Briefs. Midwest. So I wonder, does that mean people are moving to the Midwest? I don't know.
We're just
probably
more
is.
Popular.
More
I know, it's so much fun.
Grocery inflation keeps rising. U.S. food prices rose 1.8% year over year in December, the fastest rise in over a year. The reason? There are a bunch, like the bird flu is killing chickens, making eggs more expensive, plus bad weather is hurting coffee and the cocoa harvest. And that source is Market Briefs. And Dennis, you mentioned earlier when we were talking about this, there's a disease in the cocoa plants?
In cocoa plants, there's significant disease. There was an article in the Wall Street Journal maybe 2 weeks ago about a disease that they're having a difficult time controlling, as well as the other part of this is over-regulation by governments overseas. Mm. They're trying to balance out the price that the farmers are getting for their crops. Mm. And what happened? The price skyrocketed because there were almost no crops. Mm. And now all the growers are having to accept these much lower prices from the governments that are overseeing this.
Wow.
So you see why the government can make a difference when the prices are low. But you wind up getting skinned if the prices go up and they're not reacting to the market.
Wow.
In that particular point.
And this could be really sad for us as Americans because this is eggs, coffee, and chocolate. I mean, these are the essentials.
No, chocolate is really important.
That's
so not good.
Breakfast of champions.
Exactly.
Chocolate Cheerios. Yeah.
Chocolate covered eggs. No tariffs yet. Many experts wondered why Trump didn't sign an executive order on tariffs on Monday. And when he answered that question... Andy answered that question yesterday. Trump now says he wants to impose a 25% tariff on Canada and Mexico starting on February 1st, which would make their goods more expensive. Those two countries made up over 30% of all U.S. trade in 2024, and that source is Market Briefs.
Mm.
U.S. oil prices fall. U.S. oil prices fell more than 2% on Tuesday as markets reacted to two things. Trump's energy emergency that would open up more U.S. oil production, no immediate tariffs, which would have raised prices on foreign oil. And that source is Market Briefs.
More supply.
Yeah.
could mean lower prices. Yes. We'll see what happens with that. A lot of dynamic changes. I mean, who would have thought that there would have been that many executive orders, that encompassing, that just amazingly detailed and thorough in some of those that have been enacted? Frankly, I think everybody is surprised how many and full encompassing those are.
One man's vision. We'll see as we go along how all this plays out.
Mm-hmm. Yes, mm-hmm. It certainly makes for interesting coverage, and he's following through on many of the promises that he made to his voters, for sure. All right, we had a question on the break here. I'm 62 now, another 62-year-old question.
Okay.
A bit different, a bit of a twist. Can I keep working and take my Social Security now? What are the financial penalties for taking Social Security now and continuing to work full-time? Let's say making over $100,000 a year. Well, at that level, you'd have a full penalty from the Social Security benefit. It means that even if you took it, you'd have to give it all back. So probably not a good idea, because then you'd forfeit all those increases that you could be taking in your own Social Security benefit, given that you were not taking it. So you can make your full amount that you want to without any penalties from Social Security. At what age, Heidi?
At your full retirement age, which is based on what year you were born.
Mm-hmm. FRA, or full retirement age, for those born after 1960.
It's 67.
67 years old. Yes, yes. So there you have it. So you will take a penalty for every $2 that you make over the income allowed by Social Security, which is about $20,000-$21,000 or so. You'll take a $1 cut. Yeah, it's rather low. You'll take a $1 cut for every $2 you make over that. So if you're making $80,000 over that, that's pretty clear that you're going to take a full cut to all of your benefits. Not a good idea, as we said. So from the Ed Slott newsletter, top IRA rulings of 24. There were many listed. We're only going to discuss a few, else we would have those snoozing. Snoozing not allowed. All right. Be careful with multiple IRAs. Why is that? Another interesting and expansive ruling was confirmed in the 2024 Final Secure Act regulations, according to Andy Ives, IRA analyst with Ed Slott & Company. If a person has multiple IRAs, so you've got an IRA at XYZ company, you've got an IRA at a mutual fund over here, over there, everywhere. Let's say there are five, relatively common these days. Hmm. Let's say you've got held at different custodians. The total aggregated required minimum distribution for all the IRAs held by one individual must be withdrawn before any Roth IRA conversions or 60-day rollovers can be completed. So what that means is your RMDs start now at age 73. You have to take your full required minimum distribution as compiled or figured by all of those accounts, their combined values as of 12/31/24, given that we're in January now of 25. Mm-hmm. Once you've taken all those RMDs, combining again all of your IRAs, then you can do a Roth conversion. Roth conversion. Now, why would you want to do both? I'm taking my RMD and I'm paying all the tax on that, and I'm going to increase my tax level beyond that? Why? Why, pray tell, would anyone decide to do that? Heidi?
Well, you may want the future earnings on that money to be tax-free. You may want to lower future year RMDs, and by moving money out of the traditional IRA over to a Roth IRA, you are lowering that traditional IRA balance. And so, when you do the math to do the divisor for the required minimum distribution, you're using a lower amount, and so that can impact those future years of required minimum distributions by doing conversions now.
So a common question might be, Dennis, why do you play these games with taxes all the time? I mean, how much can you talk about it, really? Well, given how low tax rates are today, the 12% bracket, federal bracket, is good up to about, I don't even know what it is for 25. 24, I think, was about 94,000 of taxable income. Do you really have that?
I do.
Hold on one. I can't believe I'm even saying that.
Of course she does. Of course. She always has all of
these. Our A-plus students pages here, sitting here.
Yeah.
So the 2025 maximum taxable income at the 12% for those married filing jointly is almost 97,000 now, 96,950. Another gift. Isn't that awesome? $97,000 you're paying a 12% federal tax rate on. That is incredibly reasonable for most money to pay to make a long-time investment decision. A long-time investment decision, because any incomes that you draw under certain limitations out of the IRA are fully tax-free, and you do not have to take RMDs. You can pass it on to your spouse. She or he then would not have to take distributions. When you pass it on to your children, they do have to take distributions over a 10-year period. Well, they don't have to empty it until the end of the 10th year, and they're totally tax-free.
Yeah.
So it is a long-term tax play that can make sense as a diversification tool. Man, I mean,
absolutely.
So much to talk about in so little time. So it's just really, it can be for many a great way to defer some money into the future that's totally tax-free. And what if tax rates go up? What if indeed they do go up somehow or some way? Next, do we still have time here, Ron? How are we doing?
We're good on time. I have a question, too, about Social Security. You want to do that?
Let's do that, yeah.
So here's someone who turned 65, and they weren't ready to start drawing their Social Security. They say they found out, though, the law said they had to pay into Social Security for Medicare. And they said that threw them for a loop because they already had their own insurance, but they still had to pay in for Medicare.
But you can pay your premium separately for Medicare.
Taking
your benefit. You don't have to take your Social Security benefit to pay Medicare, if that's what they understood, if that's what they're saying in that text.
But do you have to take...
thank you, Colleen.
You have to take Medicare at a certain age? If you say, I like the insurance I have right now, I don't want Medicare, you still have to take it, right?
You have to sign up at age 65.
Okay. If you don't, there could be a penalty.
How do I know that you can pay it separately? Because I did 2 days ago.
Aha. Uh-huh.
Yeah. We have a real life example.
I know. Yeah. In the studio.
In the flesh.
If you have to sign up for Medicare at the right time. Otherwise, mm-hmm. You could be penalized, right?
Correct.
Correct. All right. Right. So do people get a notice on that in the mail, or how do they know that?
Do they get a notice? You know, I get all these cards and letters in the mail, and I don't always read all of them. Yeah. Glenn Campbell. But I don't honestly recall. I just called Laverna Woodcup down at Ford Agency, and she helped me.
All right.
Help me.
It's always good to seek an expert when
it
I'm
is.
Dealing with
oh
this
my
stuff.
Gosh. So really, consult with a qualified insurance professional regarding that Social Security and Medicare kerfuffle.
When you're getting close to probably 62, which is the earliest you can collect Social Security, mm-hmm. you got to talk to a professional or get an idea what your strategy is.
Yes.
65 is Medicare age, same thing.
Correct.
Coming up on that, contact a professional.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. You can't believe, you know, it's not rocket science, but it's we don't get involved in it that much. So you want somebody who knows the rules of the road. You just do.
And you want to be prepared. I know when I've talked to Laverna, and I know when she's been on
Even
the
though
show,
you're so far away from 65.
I am way far. But she told me to start sending people to her when they're 63, 64. You want to get all that research and know what you want to choose when you get to 65 instead of trying to do all that research in just a month or two. Mm-hmm. So the more pre-planning you do, the more easy of mind you can be that you're making the right choice for yourself.
All right, Sean is in Traverse City with a question for the Prout Gang on New Retirement Radio. Good morning, Sean.
Very good. Thank you. I appreciate your insight and always your expertise. I have a question regarding trust. So I have a trust in place that if I were to perish, my son, beneficiary, he's to receive money over time. However, with the new rules that are in place, I guess he has to spend it all down within 10 years or start paying tax on it. Is there any grandfather clause that protects me because the trust was written before the new rules, or do I need to update my trust because I'm SOL?
How old is your son?
He's 17 now.
Well, there are certain rules and regulations you want to be aware of. Until he's 18, he doesn't have to take the standard required minimum distribution from that IRA if he would inherit it. But you want to make certain that the trust language, if your funds are in an IRA, is that what you're saying, that the trust is funding it with?
Yeah, there's a variety of funds funding the trust, but IRAs are one of them.
Yes, because IRAs are one of them, you may decide to do that somewhat differently and choose the trust language that allows those distributions to occur and then transfer those assets into the trust via the IRA. So there's some manipulations or machinations, if you will, that your son would want to know about. But that's something you, to the extent that you feel comfortable encouraging that information to him or helping him with that info, he's going to want to know how to handle that. And or the advisor or trustee who is the successor trustee should you pass away. You know, what kind of a trustee are you using? Is it a corporate trustee or a family member? Who's overseeing
family.
That trust? Family?
Yes.
Yeah. You definitely want to make certain that they know the rules of that road and that what you've done.
Very good. I appreciate your help.
All
Thank
right.
you.
Just general information there because that is complex. You definitely want to consult with a financial advisor and an attorney in regards to that situation. Okay.
All right. And a clarification, we had a few texts on Medicare. If you don't have to pay for Medicare, if you have your own insurance, you just have to sign up and there's no charge. You have to sign up at a certain time?
It depends on your health plan. If your health plan covers more than 20, then you don't have to pay it. If it covers less than 20, then you do need to sign up for Medicare and pay it. Okay.
And I think there's a restriction on if your employer has more than 20 employees.
That's what I was saying. Right. Yes. Yeah. That's indeed what I just said.
Yeah. So those are insurance questions. Check with an insurance professional.
Absolutely. Yes. Do that. Check with them. Yes. Because honestly, these questions that I give, that I answer on the radio, are only in a face, if you will, they're not thorough enough. Unless you've spoken with a professional in regards to those questions and have a direct face-to-face conversation, okay? And these are great questions, too. Thank
absolutely.
You.
Yeah.
Is this an easy one? So if I have taken all the RMDs, required minimum distributions, by December 31st, what is the deadline to do a partial Roth conversion for the past year?
Yeah, you can't do a Roth conversion for the past year.
Okay.
You can only do it for the year in which you're in, the calendar year.
That's a January to December
yes.
time frame.
Now, you can make a Roth IRA contribution if you have earned income for 24 up to April 15th this year. Is that the tax filing deadline this year?
I don't know. It's supposed to be, but it never seems to be anymore.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Traditionally.
That's radical. No, let's see. April 15th is a Tuesday this year.
So it might be April 15th.
It is tax day, yeah.
Okay.
All right. We're good.
One more. Hopefully it's an easy one.
Yes, all right.
My mom passed away December 26th. She had an IRA close to $400,000. What tax would be assessed if we liquidated and closed the account?
Well, the tax would be significant if you liquidate it. You want that to go into the beneficiary's accounts because done the incorrect way, that total $400,000 would be counted as income for all those participants. So because she's already passed away, they're each going to have to pay the tax at their own brackets, depending on how many beneficiaries there are. If there's just one beneficiary, that's $400,000 of additional income in that year. So many penalties potentially with that. So be aware.
That could definitely throw you into a higher tax bracket
absolutely,
pretty easily.
Yeah, it's not just 12%. It's more like 22%. Perhaps even greater, plus Medicare, the IRMA tax, the IRMA penalty.
Yeah.
And we don't like Irma in the world of financial advisors, yes.
Yeah. All right.
So the tax at $400,000 on up to 32% if that's income combined with others, depending on your deductions, okay?
All right, we're going to wrap up here. It's New Retirement Radio with Prout Financial Design, Dennis Prout, Heidi Cartwright, Deanne Jennings. It's been real. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Best wishes.
We'll miss Deanne Jennings, but
yes,
Dennis and Heidi will be back. ProutFinancialDesign.com for any more information. Thank you all.
Thanks, Ron.